12. The Terrors. Lion's mouth burned. The flames crackled and danced, licking the town's cold bones with hungry tongues. Black smoke reached high into the night, illuminated from below by a flickering, hellish glow. The blaze had been stubborn at first, and we'd had to help the houses catch with handfuls of black ignis from the barrel I'd brought from Saint-Michel. But the wind was high, and the snows had stopped, and soon the town had become a beacon, a roar of challenge, echoing across the frozen hills ahead and lonely roads behind. Come and get us. Phoebe and I stood atop the keep's crumbling walls, engulfed in the blessed heat of the town's last breath. Selene crouched on the battlements nearby, clearly afeard of the flames. I lit my pipe on one of the torches beside me, warm red in my lungs, watching my sister watching the blaze. The phial of blood that Dior had given me was tucked inside a crack in the wall nearby, the stopper loosed. The scent was overpowering, rising above the smoke and twisting like a knife in my belly. It shouldn't hurt this much. What the hell is wrong with me? Voss's brood can read thoughts, remember, I warned. Dior's mind seems a locked room to the dead, but they might try for a peek, nonetheless. So, give them a glimpse, then get out of sight. Don't throw the game away before the first card is dealt. Phoebe turned up Dior's frock coat to hide the collar of Evernot about her throat. The dusk dancer had bound her thick red hair back, caked it with pale ash from the hearth. Pulling the girl's tricorn lower, she tucked her pointed ears inside the brim. This is my plan, Silver Saint. Save the schooling for the bairns, eh? Fine. You fuck this up. Don't come running to me.
Alas, then, because that's exactly where I was planning to run.
They may not strike tonight, Selene nodded to the inferno, shuddering. If there is one thing all kith fear, it is fire. One does not live to be ancien by being a fool. Maybe not, I shrugged. But if they don't hit tonight while the fire burns, they have to try tomorrow while the sun is up. Or risk us slipping away, I inhaled, shivering as the blood hymn roiled all the way to my fingertips. When Danton threatened to attack Avalane, he had a force with him, no doubt, but his victory was nothing close to assured. And still, the beast pressed, no matter the danger. Strange as it is, there's impatience at the heart of it. The Forever King wants Dior now, not next year, not tomorrow. I blew a plume of thick red smoke into the air, shaking my head. Now.
The auguries of my kin have long foretold these nights, Phoebe murmured, looking up to the dark. A time when the weald shall rot, and the mother moons hide their faces from the woes of the world. The All Mothers say that the godling is fated to end the time of blighted blood. But it seems to me the dead would want it to last forever and kill the one who can stop it. So why is the Forever King so keen to take that girl alive?
I sighed. Buggered if I know. The Dusk Dancer scowled, looking past me to Selene.
What say ye, leech? What business has your grandad with that lass?
Selene stared out at the flames, her voice soft as the smoke rising toward heaven. Fabian Voss may be the oldest kith that yet walks this earth. Old enough to remember the Red Crusades, the Wars of the Blood, the Ave Sancti Heresy. Phoebe blinked.
The what's that?
But Selene only shook her head, a voice soft with awe and horror. 700 years, almighty God, just imagine it. Watching the world around you change while you stay exactly the same. All you know, fading. All you love, dying. And yet, you remain. What kind of strength would it take to bear the weight of all that time? What kind of
monster can look into the eyes of eternity and smile.
Phoebe and I exchanged a dark glance. I was about to press, to demand answers, to know something of what Selene saw at work here. But as I opened my mouth, I caught sight of a lone figure limping up the thoroughfare, aglow with the light of the flames.
"Where now?" I hissed. "Company."
It had been an old woman once, grey hair and peasant smock. Its flesh was discoloured, horribly swollen, bloated tongue protruding between its fangs. A thumbprint was smeared in bright red blood down its brow, across its eyes, and it shambled into the square, staring across that fountain of broken coffins to the woman at my side.
"They're here," I said loudly. "Get downstairs, Dior."
Phoebe protested in a passable Eladani accent.
"Gabe, I can fight, I can..."
"Downstairs, now, damn you."
The Dusk Dancer spat a curse, a touch overdramatic, if you ask me, ducking out of sight near the stairs. The wretched below stared a moment longer, snuffling Dior's blood scent on the air. Swiveling its head, its gaze roamed the square, the burning houses, the toppled church. Its eyes were black, glittering with malevolent intelligence. It was an hour we waited, aglow in the light of that dying town. Selene and I lurked upon the walls, and that dead thing shuffled about below, taking all the time in the world. It stalked the burning streets, searching for ambush, some hidden gambit. You don't live forever by rushing in blind. Rummaging through the detritus in the fountain, the wretched flipped back the lid of a child's coffin and found the cache of silver bombs, metal scraps and roofing nails I'd hidden there. With an almost withering glance to me, it plucked out the explosives, one by one, and hurled them into a distant burning house.
"Well, shit.
We told you they would find those," Selene muttered.
"And I'm sure you're heartbroken to be proven right yet again," I scowled. "But if you don't bet, you won't win, sister."
Finally, seemingly satisfied, the wretched shivered once and stood motionless, staring up at the battlements with bloodied eyes. Unscrewing the cap of my flask, I took a long pull of vodka, swallowing once, twice, three times without pause. Phoebe looked at me from the shadows by the stairwell, a frown creasing her scarred brow.
"You really think it wise to get shite-faced at a time like this?" she hissed.
"You really want to die sober?"
Phoebe sucked her lip in thought, then beckoned.
"Hand it over, then."
"What's the magic word?"
The Dusk Dancer raised one brow, hand on hip.
"Now?"
Taking another long swallow, I slipped the flask back into my coat.
"You'll find life a lot easier once you learn to say please, Kit Kat."
"You'll find life a lot shorter if you call me Kit..."
"God's sakes, be silent," Selene hissed. "Look."
In the dancing firelight, I saw figures at the east gate, dim through the smoke, the snort and stomp of frightened ponies rising over the roar of Lion's Mouth last night. They dismounted at the walls. Even thralled horses were loath to enter an inferno, and the Voss had no true mastery over beasts. Leaving some of their number behind to manage the mounts, our executioners threaded their way toward the town square. They came with slow and wary tread, but the fact they came at all through that blaze spoke volumes. The Forever King coveted Dior Lachance with a hunger I'd never seen like of.
God almighty, what must she mean to him?
"They're here," I murmured, drawing my blade into the light.
"Pretty fire,"
she whispered, her voice tinged with sadness.
"Fire, but pretty. Reminds me, days gone, battles won. Do you remember, Gabriel, how I used to be?
"Always," I murmured, glancing to that silvered dame. "I hope you're thirsty, Ash."
"Always,"
she sighed. A few thrall swords came first, mortal men of the blade, slaved to cold blood wills. But behind came others I recognized from the night we'd fought Danton upon the mare. A scowling warrior named Roisin the Red, clad in fur and leathers. A golden-haired madam called Liviana, wearing an elegant gown entirely unsuited for a cross-country pursuit. A boy known as Fetch, not more than 10 when he died, dressed in pale, blood-spattered finery. What had become of the other iron hearts we'd fought that night, I'd no ken. Perhaps the Forever King had them searching elsewhere in Nordland. Perhaps he'd killed them as punishment for Danton's death. But all my wanderings were silenced as the smoke parted, and I saw the things Fabian had sent in his baby boy's wake. 7 martyrs. They were maids, a pair of them. Willow tall, sharp chins and sharper cheeks. Their hair was long and straight as swords, cut in severe fringes above their lashes, and though the wind howled about them, not a strand of it moved in that burning gale. They wore jodhpurs, knee-length boots, and both carried riding crops in hand. Elegant coats were cut in a feminine style, and each wore a slash of crimson paint on her lips, like knife wounds in those beautiful, terrible faces. They walked in unison, hand in hand, though when one stepped with right boot, the other stepped left. It was as if each was a reflection of the other, not only in movement, but seeming. For the first had black hair, dark skin, a daughter of the Sudeimi Plains. The second's hair was ash blonde, her skin marble, a child of the Eladani Mountains. Their cloth they wore for contrast, light on dark, dark on light. But the eyes of both were bottomless pools, flooded utterly black by the uncounted centuries they'd walked this earth with deathless feet.
God help us, Selene whispered.
White-hot rage coursed my veins as I shook my head. He's not listening, sister. Alba and Elaine Voss, the Terrors, the Forever King's eldest children. Both were so ancient, none could say how old they truly were. Some rumour held it they'd been Voss's first victims, virgin priestesses plucked but a few nights after Fabien himself became. Others whispered they were hunters of the dark, sorceresses sent to kill him, instead bested and corrupted by his blood. Whatever the truth then, they were creatures of impossible power now, almost equal of their dread father. And looking down from my crumbling perch, I took one last drag of Sanctus from my pipe and whispered Red into the burning air. We might be in shite here, mes amis. Alba and Elaine stopped in the square, noses to the wind. They blinked in unison, and I saw that each had bloody eyes painted upon their lids, giving the uncanny impression they could still see, even with eyes closed. I snatched a torch from a nearby sconce, tossed it down into the fountain of coffins in the heart of the square. The flames caught on the old wood, slow but stubborn, the air filled with the reek of smouldering death. I felt my lips curl in grim triumph as the younger Voss stepped back from the rising flames, throwing nervous glances to the inferno around them. But the Terrors didn't flinch. They'd already discovered my trap of silver bombs after all. Leech flesh burns like tinder, and even elder coldbloods fear fire. But in a slow, contemptuous display of the terrible power in their veins, Alba and Elaine removed their riding gloves, one finger at a time, and held their hands in the burning fountain as if to warm them. They stared at me as they did so, eyes black and unblinking, completely unafeared. After a moment, they withdrew their hands, standing with fingers entwined once more, and though the skin of any other leech would have been charred to fucking cinders, I saw the pale marble of Alba's skin had been merely singed, from bone white to pale grey. I nodded, swallowing hard. We're in shite. The Terrors spoke,
lips moving in harmony, each voice a perfect echo of the other.
"Good eve, lion. Thou art in better form than when last we laid eyes upon thee. Our dread father bids us give thee greetings, his assurance that he still awaits thee in the east, and condolence upon the feast he made of thy daughter and bride."
Selene and Phoebe both glanced to me, horror and pity in the dusk dancer's eyes, grim understanding in my sister's. My teeth ached as I clenched my jaw, remembering this pair standing outside my home the night the Forever King came calling. My fist tightened about Ashdrinker's haft, leather creaking as I squeezed.
"They seek to goad thee," she whispered. "Listen and not, Gabriel."
"Shall we parley?" Alba and Elaine asked. "Shall we offer concord? Or shall we presume poor brother Danton hath already played that song to deaf and foolish ears? We shall allow safe passage, if ye beg it, De Leon. We have but one demand in return."
They each held out a hand, one right, the other left.
"The girl."
I felt a hammer blow on my mind then, clawed fingers trying to push through my eyes and into the soft, wet grey beyond. But the aegis was burning now on my skin, and my years in Saint-Michel rose to the fore, and colossal though the force of those ancient minds were, I forced them out, off, away.
"You'll have to do better than that, bitches," I hissed.
"Not much better," they smiled.
"Why do you seek the Grail?"
The terrors blinked, eyes shifting from me to Selene. My sister stood tall upon the battlements now, mask underscored by the firelight, great coat billowing in the updraft.
"What does Fabienne want with Dior?"
"Who art thou to speak in our presence, child?"
the terrors replied.
"We are daughters of the blood iron, the blood royal. We are thy elders and thy betters."
"We know who you are," Selene said. "We know who you serve."
"Were that true, thou wouldst take not his name in vain, whelp, nor his enemies count thyself in service of."
"We serve no man," Selene spat, "and I am no whelp. I am last begotten child of Law, your sister, the Wraith in Red. The blood of the Forever King flows in these veins."
The terrors paused at that, exchanging a brief and black glance.
"Bring the girl to us, then," they replied. "Break the silver dog beside thee, and lay the Grail here at our feet. Thou shalt be royalty in the court of iron."
"Petite nièce,
the Forever King shall grant thee reward undreamed of."
"But he already has, belle tante."
Alba and Elaine tilted their heads.
"Indeed? Oh, oui,"
Selene nodded, hands rising to her face.
"He brought you here to me."
And with those words, she dragged her mask aside. I'd seen it before, but my stomach still turned as the horror of Selene's face was laid bare. From the cheekbones up, my sister was a beautiful maid, so akin to our mama, it made my heart ache to see. Pale features and dark hair, fine-boned and beautiful. But the skin on the bottom half of her face was simply gone. The muscle and bone were exposed, fangs gleaming in her lower jaw, and beneath her scarf, the skin of her throat had been ripped free like a troublesome glove, torn away by Lord Voss the day she murdered her.
"Sweet Mother Moons," Phoebe whispered. "Tonight we drink your heart's blood, madame," Selene vowed. "Tonight I take all that was yours and reclaim a little more of what was mine."
Cold silence settled upon the square, as if the flames themselves held their breath. Three things happened next, each in quick succession,
perhaps no more than the beat of a bird's heart between them or the flash of an angel's wing. First, I heard distant sounds, the whinny of a frightened horse, steel on steel. At the same moment, Selene tore her fingernails across her palms. Her blood spilled, bright and thick, snaking up and out and coalescing into her bloody blade and flail. And at the sight, the terrors whispered, black eyes narrowed, red tongues dry. Essani! Gabriel paused his tale, tipping his head to take a slow gulp of wine. Honey-warm light spilled across his skin, playing in the dips and furrows of his throat as he swallowed and sighed, lips curling in a dark smile as that whisper echoed once more in his head. Their hate. Their fear. Essani. And the third? Jean-Francois asked. Gabriel blinked, looking up at the historian. Eh? The third thing, the cold blood pressed. Birds' hearts and angels' wings? Oh, that. Reaching out slow, Gabriel picked up the dusty bottle of Monet, upended it over his goblet. He let the bottle hang, Jean-Francois along with it, the historian's brow darkening as the bottle's last drip, drip, dripped into the Silver Saint's glass. And lifting his wine in toast, Gabriel smiled. The fountain exploded, of course.